Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. And we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby. This is the Salu Al Show, where you speak up, listen up, and act upon what you've heard. One thing you could act upon right now is celebrating Seniors Week in BC. You're going to be hearing a presentation by the Senior Advocate for the province, Isabel McKenzie, and you will learn some of the commonality of the issues and problems that seniors are having, how they might relate to you as a college student, working adult. Just take a listen. Let me know what you think and take time to take action on anything that you've heard that you think, we can do better than that about.
Okay, it is, in fact, a huge pleasure for me to introduce Isabel McKenzie this afternoon. When the government of British Columbia introduced the legislation to create the Office of the Seniors Advocate, I was one of the people who was really disappointed. I had hoped that the Seniors Advocate would be independent of government, much the same way that the Ombudsperson is independent of government and reports to the legislature. I held that view until I first heard Isabel speak. And on that day, I got to understand that she understood that anything that she reported on, she could report to the public without requiring the permission of the Minister of Health. I also understood from what she said that all of her reports would be based on evidence. Things that we know from the statistics out there in the world that would support insight into what was happening to seniors. And then I applied to be on the Advisors Council to the Seniors Advocate, and ended up, through some peculiarities, spending 4 years as a member of that council. So I got a much closer look at what Isabel was doing. And I can tell you that she kept her promises. She kept the promise to do things that are based on evidence. She collects information from the health authorities. She does all sorts of things, including surveys that allow her to conclude and make recommendations. And there have been recommendations on things like housing, things like transportation, commentary on the number of people receiving home care, but noting that the number of hours that they receive has generally declined. One of the pieces that struck me as really important was evidence that people are in long-term care are being given antipsychotic medication to manage their behavior, even though they've not been diagnosed as psychotic. I have plans for when I enter long-term care. So she's done all sorts of interesting reports, and I want to encourage you to go online or go to the library and look at those reports, because I think she has served seniors well by bringing issues out into the public eye, as well as referring all sorts of issues to government for attention. I learned recently that Isabel is going to retire next year. Welcome to retirement, a bit ahead of time. It's my hope that whoever succeeds Isabel as the seniors advocate will live up to her example as someone who has served the interests of seniors exceptionally well. It's a real joy to introduce Isabel McKenzie.
Thank you very much, Stuart. And I just want to say what a pleasure it is to be here to kick off Seniors Week 2023, which will be my last Seniors Week tour as the advocate. I started out this morning in Victoria. The Lieutenant Governor hosted a very nice garden party, and we invited seniors who volunteer in the community to thank them for their voluntary services. And I'm going to talk a little bit about it in my presentation. We often talk about the challenges and the trials and the tribulations of aging and what we need that we don't have. But Seniors Week is a time to celebrate. And I think it's really important to celebrate who we have in this province as seniors. And the example that I give, and this will resonate, I'm pretty sure, with everybody in this room, which is think about what would happen in British Columbia if everybody over the age of 65 decided to just put their feet up for a day. First of all, the healthcare system would collapse because the tens of thousands of seniors who are caring for their spouse, their friend, their neighbor, their grandchild would no longer be doing that. Who would run the senior centers? Who would organize the blood drives? Who would give the drives that people need to get them to their necessary medical appointments? None of that would be happening because all of those things are done by seniors in the province. And I talk about the money that gets raised in this province every day by seniors that goes back into our healthcare system. The hospital auxiliaries of this province, which are 98% volunteers who are 65 and over, they raise over $10 million every year to reinvest into the healthcare system for people of all ages. So it's important to remember that seniors in this province are not just an issue or a problem or a need that we need to meet. The seniors in this province are an incredible resource that get up, people, men and women who get up every day with a purpose to make their community a better place and by extension this province a better place. So I just want to start out with that message. So in British Columbia today there are 1 million people age 65 and over. That is one out of five or 20% of British Columbians. So as you know, and as we have been expecting, the number of people 65 and older is growing every year, and the proportion of people, the percentage of the population 65 and older, is growing every year. And so we're seeing what we are expecting to see. And we'll keep growing, both in terms of numbers and proportion, until British Columbia gets up around 28% of the population, or just a little over one out of four, will be 65 and older. And what's important to remember is that British Columbia doesn't have the oldest population in Canada. That's in the Maritimes, actually. We have one of the fastest growing for 65 and older. We don't have the fastest growing 85 and older. That's next door in Alberta. But suffice it to say that we will continue this gradual increase in our number of seniors. And the map up there shows you that the distribution of seniors is not constant throughout BC, and even within health authorities it's not constant either. So over on the island where I come from, it's already one out of four. Or the interior where I'm heading to after this meeting, it's already one out of four. Fraser, Coastal, actually have a younger population, and then the North has quite a young population. Only 15% of the population in the North is 65 and older. But even within those health authorities, you will see pockets of quite dense seniors population. So if you take Vancouver Coastal, for example, go to Seashelt, and it's about 48% of the population in Seashelt is 65 and older. So even within health authorities, it's not consistent. And that presents some challenges around resources funding, because as I started my talk today about seniors who volunteer, in communities with a lot of seniors, actually, you intuitively think, oh, that's a problem, a lot of people on the same, you know, serve. Actually, you find the opposite. And one of the reasons is because many of the things that seniors enjoy as support services as they age are volunteer driven, and that's who the volunteers are. So when you have a large seniors population, you have a large volunteer population, and that is certainly something they struggle with up in the north. Where are seniors living? This represents our latest census data. So what is it, 2022 census, I think. Subtle differences, I would say moving in the right direction. Overwhelmingly, people 65 and older live independently. So most of you in this room will live the entirety of your life in your own home. About when we look at people 85 and older, so 85 is the average age of a person in a nursing home in British Columbia. When we look at 85 and older, 77% of people still live in their own home. That went up just a little bit in the last census. So we're seeing a trend of people staying, people are living longer, they're living healthier longer, and they're living in their own home longer. All trends we want to see. About 9% of people 85 and older live in what we call assisted living, retirement home, seniors independent living. It's the kind of thing where you have your own apartment, more or less, a kitchenette or a kitchen, a bedroom usually, but you take your meals with other people, and then sometimes you might get some services to help with personal care, but a much more independent way of living. And then long-term care or nursing homes, when we look at 85 and older, it's only 13%. And that went down a little bit as the living independently went up. So even though there are more people 85 and older, proportionately, a little bit fewer are living in long-term care than previous. So that's also a good sign. About 80% of households are owned by people 65 and older. It translates into about 85% of seniors are homeowners. Another way to put it is 15% of seniors are renters. It's a little bit higher in areas like Vancouver. And the challenge is that if you are a senior and you are a homeowner, you have benefited to a large extent over the last number of years from the challenges in our housing market. But if you are a senior who rents, you have been catastrophically impacted by what has happened in our real estate market because incomes are so low in people over 65, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. About 14% of people 65 and older are employed. That number grows each year. Frankly, that is to be expected. We are living longer, we're living healthier, more significantly, we are waiting longer to start our full-time engagement with the workforce. There's some basic arithmetic you cannot mess with, which is you cannot spend more years drawing from a pension plan than you spend paying into the pension plan. There's a golden group out there, I may or may not be one of them, where we will enjoy more years pulling out than putting in. But what you're seeing is people are going to work long, 66, 67, not even out of economic need so much as they still want to be active and engaged. It is, and that number is growing. About 88% of people at the age of 65 have a driver's license, and you can see that that number drops as we get older, although at 85 it's still 58%. And hot off the press, new news out of RoadSafe BC, this took effect on May the 1st. So, we have the driver medical exam requirement for anybody driving when they turn age 80. What we then had was the requirement to go every 2 years after that for another driver's medical exam. That has changed as of May 1st. You still have to go for the driver medical exam at 80, but you do not need to go again until 85. And that was based on looking at the evidence, and the evidence showed because there is the age 80 screen, a lot of people use that as a decision point to choose not to drive. We don't actually yank driver's licenses out of people's hands very often. Most people will decide. So given that, we found that at between 80 and 85, the number of motor vehicle accidents caused by someone aged 80 to 85, where a health condition was the underlying cause, was almost zero. It was it can happen, but it didn't register. So there wasn't the value in that. There is value at age 85. So at age 85, you go again, and then every 2 years after that. Dementia. So the other notion out there, along with this, everyone's going to go to the nursing home, which is actually not true, is the notion that if you live long enough, you're going to lose all your marbles, which is also not true. So if we look at the entire population 65 and older, the prevalence of dementia, it's found in 6% of the population. Sorry, I've got these things on my teeth that give me a bit of a lisp. When you look at the age 65 to 84, it actually drops down to 3%. It's a large number of people, but the prevalence in the population is only 3%. When you go to age 85, it jumps, and it jumps arguably quite dramatically. It goes up to 20% of the population 85 and older has a diagnosis of dementia. But think of that another way. 80%, 8 out of 10 people 85 and older do not have a diagnosis of dementia. Now, if I went out at 90 and 95 and 100, those numbers would rise. There's no doubt it is a disease. The probability of developing it increases with age. That's absolute truths. But it is not axiomatic that if you live long enough, you'll develop dementia. The reality is you will keep most of your marbles for the entirety of your life, however many or few, Stuart, they may be. So, you know, I talk to people and I say, you know, if somebody was a ditz at 35, they don't morph into Mensa material at 90. Do not confuse dim with dementia. And why it's important is because it's important for two reasons. Personally, it's important for all of us to understand, yes, we may lose capacity to make decisions, but in all likelihood, we won't. And the way you exercise your autonomy, your agency, your free will, whatever you want to call it, is actually linked to whether you think you have that capacity. And society does a pretty good job of making you think you're going to lose that as you get older.
Right.
So it's important as individuals. It's also important for us as we judge other people. So stereotypes exist all over the place in all kinds of things. And so when we see somebody struggling at the pin pad at the Safeway counter and they've got gray hair, we immediately think, uh-oh, they've started that long day's journey in tonight, or the PowerPoint, noted. When in fact, they probably just, they can't see the pin pad because they're more likely actually to have macular degeneration. Or they've got 75 different passwords because they listen to the, you know, don't have the same password. All of those are more probable. And so it's important for us to remember that. It's a balance. There is without a doubt. But, you know, even people diagnosed with dementia don't lose capacity over the big decisions. And generally, you've got to have a fairly advanced Alzheimer's or dementia before you really lose the fundamental capacity to know where you want to live, who you want to live with, how you want to live, and to understand risk. Just because you don't make the same choice that I, as the healthcare provider or daughter, want you to make, doesn't mean you lack the capacity to make that decision. And that's very important for all of us to remember. You know, I give these talks and then somebody in the audience will ask a question and, you know, their head nods when I say, you know, we've got, and then I can tell by the question they've asked, they don't get it. Like, you know, my neighbor, it's not safe for her to live alone anymore. I'm worried about her. Her daughter doesn't come. Okay, well, you know, let's just slow down here. We all have the right to choose the risk we want to live with if we have the capacity to understand the risk. And by simply choosing to live at risk doesn't mean we lack the capacity to understand it. To be fair, it's simple in concept. It becomes more complicated when family members come into the equation and the burden on family members that it sometimes incurs in order for somebody to assume the risk they want to live with. So on the less cheerful side, one of the things that I think is underestimated and is also conflated with the housing market is the financial resources or status of seniors, arguably in BC and in the country at large. So the median income for seniors, so that means, median means it's the halfway point. Half of the seniors make more, half of the seniors make less. It's actually more meaningful than the average, unless the average and the median are close together. So $33,000, $32,900. Half of the seniors in British Columbia have an income less than $33,000. The average income is $47,000, except 80% of seniors don't make an average income. That's because you've got a small group of extremely high income earning seniors pulling up an average. So that's why the median here is a much more meaningful figure. And by the way, that amount is less than a minimum wage job. 6% of the labor force works at minimum wage, and 45% of seniors live below the minimum wage. And you can see that the median income of the working age population and the average income are 65% higher. That's the problem. You would expect it to be higher. You do expect incomes to drop in retirement for a number. We don't have to save for retirement anymore being one of them. But the magnitude of that gap is too large and larger than what we think it should be. Retirement savings, I mean, when you look at it, so these incomes are low. Currently, only 38% of workers have a registered pension plan, like a government pension plan or a robust workplace pension plan. Most people have only their RSPs and their government pensions when they retire, and then whatever savings they have. The median net savings of seniors, this is a Canadian average, $50,000. 40% of seniors don't have RSPs or RIFs. And in 2019, only 21% of BC tax filers contributed to the RSP. The problem is, the value of, remember, 80 to 85% of seniors own their own home, and of those, about 80% have no mortgage. And the value of those houses range from 404,000, these are averages by the way, from 404,000 to 1.3 million.
Not counting.
And what governments, when they look at what is the wealth, and there was a recent article in the Globe and Mail by a guy, columnist named Rob Carrick, it distorts it when you look at the value of the house. Because your house isn't producing an income for you. If you had $1.3 million in the bank, it would or invested, it would produce an income for you. If it's in your house, it's not producing an income for you. I think the public policy challenge that's going to lie ahead for government and the uncomfortable conversation they're going to have with every homeowner in the country is, how are we going to deal with this? Because at the moment, when it comes to seniors' incomes and seniors' subsidies on absolutely everything is based on income. Nothing is based on assets. So what does that mean in practical terms? It means that, because clearly there's some low-income seniors living in houses, and probably around here, and the houses around here are worth a lot, but the people have low incomes. The problem is, the government is treating the person making $30,000 a year in pension income living in a $1 million house exactly the same as the person with a $30,000 a year pension income living, renting an apartment in the West End for $1,800 a month. That's a problem. And I think coming to terms with it will be painful, to say the least. Now, the costs of aging against these limited incomes. So I don't have to probably tell most of you what are the, you know, extended health, eyeglasses, hearing aids, mobility aids, dental care, medications, supplies. We need help at home. It starts with household assistance. We need some cleaning. If we have a home, we might need our gutters cleared. We might need some personal care, or we might want to go to assisted or living or long-term care. And over here are the government support. So the government, the British Columbia government, to, you know, it will say, and it's true, well, we offer, you know, all of these things to support seniors as they age. Very true. Except when you look at the details of it, not for everyone and not very much applies to many of these. So PharmaCare is actually probably one of the best programs we have. It's true. We hear from people whose drugs aren't covered with from PharmaCare. It's never usually about if all they are having to purchase from the pharmacy is drugs covered under the formulary, the PharmaCare formula works for them. It's when they're prescribed something not on the formulary. And I think we can do a lot more work around educating physicians for special authority and trying the drugs that are on the formulary. The Better at Home program will help some people with housekeeping or some house maintenance, but it's an inconsistent program across the province. It has wait lists, and again, it charges some sliding fees that are supposed to be affordable, except those fees don't look at all the other things that you might have to pay for as you're aging. Home support, I'm going to talk a lot more about that in a minute. We do offer home support, which is for personal care services. The problem is we charge you for it, and we charge you a lot for it, unless you're on the guaranteed income supplement, which most seniors are not. So I'll talk about that more in a minute. One of the things that's very affordable is long-term care, arguably too affordable because that's where all roads are pushing people into it. So it doesn't, matter how poor or rich you are eligible for a subsidized long-term care bed in British Columbia, and in all probability, it will be a single, your own room with an attached bathroom. We've got a few, and Vancouver actually, unfortunately, has the most multi-bed units out there, but that's going to change over the next. Overall, it's about 76% of the rooms are single occupancy, so. And we're going to take 80% of your income, but you're going to have everything paid for, including your drugs. And no matter how high your income is, we're not going to take more than $3,800 a month. So think about that. Yeah. Think about you're in the West End on your $1,800 a month rent and trying to pay for everything else, and you got to pay for your home support. Or you can go into long-term care, and everything's provided for you. And we're not going to charge you more than $3,800 a month, and most people we charge less. Subsidized assisted living. We're just concluding a report on that. So subsidized assisted living is a great idea. Where we have it, it works well. We don't have enough of it. So if you have lots of if you've got resources, you're going to be fine because you can afford private assisted living. But if you don't, for example, if you've been a renter and you need assisted living, you don't have a house to sell, and we have very, very little subsidized assisted living available. Shelter Aid for Elderly Renters, the SAFER program. In theory, a great program. When it was first designed, it was basically designed to ensure that you only spent 30% of your income on rent. The problem is the program was designed, I don't know, more than 50 years ago, I think. And rents have gone up a little bit since then. And government introduces this cap, if you will. So in Vancouver, the SAFER program will work great for you, and you'll only pay 30% of your income on rent if your rent's $803 a month or less. If your rent is over $803 a month, you get no subsidy on anything over $803. And we have a fairly low income cap. I think it's about $28,000 for singles. So you can still be making less than minimum wage, but you are making too much to get any SAFER subsidy. And then to add insult to injury, And my office has been hearing about this because we've had a little bit of inflation over the last couple of years. Each year when your rent subsidy is calculated, we look at, let's say you're paying $1,700 a month rent. Your rent went up by whatever, $40, except we don't recognize that because we're only recognizing $803 a month, and it's a static.